Alrighty, welcome back to the show, everybody. Today I have a special guest, Emily E. Fink. And she has a brand new single coming out March 4th with a music video to follow on March 5th. Emily, thank you so much for joining the show today. How are you?
Hello, I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm very excited to be here.
That's great. Yeah, thanks for reaching out to me, actually. It's I love doing this kind of thing. Like, I love just the energy that, you know, an artist has. I know how enthusiastic somebody is, you know, like that you must be with something coming out like this. So let's get a little bit into the single. But before we do, can we get a little bit of your background and yourself, like your origins in music and your origins in singing? When did this become something that you felt that you were going to pursue well into your adulthood as of right now?
Well, that's kind of a long story. It can go many different ways. So I'll try and keep this sort of concise. I started in music when I was six on guitar. And then when I was eight, I started taking violin. When I was 10, I added piano. I worked my first professional gig. My sister also takes music. She started when she was eight. So we started at the same time because she's about 2 years older than me. And so she has taken violin though. She plays multiple instruments now, but we both played violin. That became our main instrument. And we started playing at weddings. I was 12 years old when I played my first professional gig, you know, actually getting paid for something. And it wasn't just for exposure or something like that. So, after that, we, you know, kind of started playing all over the state, different churches, different events, weddings, parties, all kinds of stuff. And I honestly hadn't planned on making music my career. I absolutely love music, but my whole life I always said that I wanted to be a veterinarian. And so I was really where I wanted to go, but my mom would always remind me, she's like, you know, when you were like 3 years old, you said you wanted to be an arter and, you know, instead of an artist. And it was like, yeah, I know. I've always was an extremely creative person. That was just something that came very naturally to me, but I never saw myself pursuing it as a career. And so when I was entering high school and I was homeschooled, so, you know, it was very involved with my mom, especially because she was the one that kind of oversaw our schooling. And she said, you know, you really need to think about this. I had really bad allergies. And even though I absolutely loved animals, she could see that probably wasn't going to be a very good career choice for me. She's like, you might want to think about it. And so I just tried pursuing all kinds of things. I was just, you know, I had so many interests in videography, in art, you know, and writing. I used to write poetry and I kind of wanted to write a book, and like I played music, and I just had all these interests and I didn't know how to sort of formulate them into one thing. Well, around that time, I got really interested in singing, but it wasn't until I was maybe like 15 that I kind of approached my mom and was like, I was honestly so scared because I knew that she wouldn't like me telling her that I didn't want to take violin lessons anymore because I'd been taking violin for so long. And she saw that I could make that as a career. You know, if I continued with it, I had the potential to, you know, make that my career. And so I was afraid of telling her that I didn't want to do that anymore. But I eventually did. And she was like, oh, really? And I said, yeah. And so we talked about it and I eventually convinced her. She made me promise that I would not stop taking violin lessons. And so I said, okay, or that I at least wouldn't stop practicing. And so I said, okay. And she let me get voice lessons. And it was just, it just kind of took off from there. You know, I finally kind of felt like I had found where I belonged. And one thing led to another. And I eventually ended up, when I was about 17, I made up my mind that I wanted to study opera specifically. And I just felt like I had been given a gift. And that I, you know, I'm a person of faith, I'm a Christian. And from that perspective, I felt like I had a responsibility, you know, God gave me this gift and I had a responsibility to use it. And so I have been studying opera now for about 4 years. And I just absolutely love it, but I can't sing opera at the moment. So I do a bunch of other things because I'm still very young. My instructor, he always says I'm a baby in the opera world and I can't actually be in operas right now. I had a voice change 2 years ago. I dropped from a soprano to a mezzo soprano. So, and it was kind of late in my life. You know, I was 20. I did not expect that to happen. So I've still been kind of getting used to being a mezzo soprano, but I started writing music when I was, I think, 18. And it was just, you know, that other thing that was like, oh, wow, I absolutely love this. And I could connect that to, you know, I've always had people tell me that I have a very unique voice, you know, people telling me when I was like 17 that, oh, you sing like you sing like you're much older and you need to sing like you, because you look very young. People always thought I was like 12 or 13. And I'm like, but that's how I sing. I'm not making my voice sound that way. That's just how I sing. And so writing music for my voice, it kind of helped me to embrace my voice as it sounded. And I sing, like I said, I'm an opera singer. And so I have a very classical sound to my voice, but I'm very inspired by the vintage pop music, like the pop music from the very early 1900s. So that is a very heavy influence on the sound of my music. And then I just kind of write what I want. I write what I hear. I write all of my own music. I compose it musically and lyrically, and I arrange it for the orchestration for, and then I sing it. And I've now, I produced my own music, you know, all the songs that I've released. This is my 7th single that I've released, and I have produced everything. Some of it I've tracked myself, and this is the 3rd song, the 4th song that I've actually engineered myself, you know, mixing it. And so it's just been a big, you know, my whole life, I've just been constantly learning. I love learning new things. I'm never, you know, stagnant. I'm never not doing anything, because I, you know, this whole thing just kind of ended up here because I love learning about things. And I just always found it much easier to sort of learn how to do it myself than to try and explain what I was wanting to somebody else. You know, that just was always so complicated. It's like, well, I'm wanting this, and then they don't get it right. And it's like, no, I want this, and then they don't get it right. And no offense to anybody else, but I just always found it easier to kind of just learn how to do it myself. And so here I've ended up, you know, where I'm at. And with regards to the music video, I directed it, I styled it, I edited the whole thing. And so, you know, I'm just kind of over here doing my own thing.
Absolutely. Wow. Fantastic work. Like I didn't realize, I was going to get into sort of the nuances of the song itself, as far as who was playing on it and so forth. The fact that you're doing the composing and the arranging and the engineering and everything, that is very impressive. So great work on that. Give you a shout out on that one. The music video, is this your first video that you've done? Is this first attempt at video editing and filming and so forth? Or you're so familiar with that as well?
Yeah. I've been making videos. Making videos was actually probably one of the first things that I got into. I remember being like, I don't know, 9 or 10. And I have 13 cousins, or I'm one of 13 cousins on just my mom's side. And we were all very close growing up, and we all got little camcorders. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the little flip camcorders. And we used to write and make movies together all the time. And I was the one that kind of started getting into editing them. So, and this was, like I said, this was years ago, like over 10 years ago. So technology's come a little further since then even.
Right.
But, I started my own YouTube channel when I was maybe like 15, and I've been making videos on there. And then I've made all of my music videos that are on there. I have 4 music videos on there right now.
Wow. So this definitely, I'm just getting the impression that you were born to do this work. Like you say, you being somebody of faith, you feel that this is sort of your responsibility, which I like the way that you framed it. You've just been sort of open to all of this, and this has kind of come your way. And you're just sort of acting it and creating it as best you can, and all these different outlets of doing it. And that, like you say, you're doing you. And a lot of people, it's courageous of you to do, because even a small aspect of that, some folks would be very, it's challenging for people to put themselves out there, and you're doing it on numerous different levels, right? The singing, the producing, the music videos. So very impressive for you. Yeah. What do you view about, you know, as far as like when you talk about the learning curve on something, like how is it for you to pick up something new? For example, like if you're doing the audio engineering, seems to be the last on the list as far as, you know, you picking it up. What does that look like to you? Specifically with your mindset, because that's a big point of resistance for somebody is learning something new. Gets frustrating. They're like, why am I not good at this yet? Yeah. Do you get any of that? Because obviously you've been doing everything for 5 to 10 years. So if you pick something else up new, are you hard on yourself initially? Like, oh, I should be as good at this as I am at violin. Or do you give yourself an allowance? How can you explain your mindset with the learning curve?
It's definitely complicated. It's funny because a lot of the stuff that I have picked up over the years came very naturally. I just happened to pick it up because I had an interest in it. The audio engineering was something that I did not want to do. When I was writing music and I was like, I've written these songs, I want to record them. And I was going to produce them and I was going to do everything for it, you know, hire a studio, hire the musicians and, you know, but I was going to produce it and sing on them. I had so many people telling me, you know, because I was just starting out, this was going to be my first time recording, that, well, why don't you just, you know, record it yourself? You know, you could learn, you do all these other things. You could learn how to audio engineer really easily. I'm like, are you kidding? I do all these other things. You know how much, like, I don't want to have to learn to do something else right now. I just want to record them and release them. I wanted to put my music out there. And they're like, just think about it. You know, I think it would save you a lot of money. You could buy some equipment and, you know, you could learn how to do that. And I'm like, I don't have time. I do so many other things. And I fought it for so many years. And when the pandemic happened, you know, the first year I had just recorded some music before lockdown happened. And so I had music to release all of 2020. And then 2021 came and I had nothing. And I went, I don't want to go a whole other year without releasing music. What am I going to do? And it was like, the only thing left for me to do is to buy equipment and learn it. Yeah. And I was like, okay, God, I get the message here. Right. You know, I guess you're trying to tell me something. And so I bought the equipment and I just started, you know, messing around with it. But it came from a place of necessity. And I, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. But honestly, I just try to trust my instincts on stuff. And so I, you know, would look up certain things so that I could learn terms and, you know, exactly what certain features do. But I've always sort of approached creativity from a place of, from a very organic standpoint. Mm-hmm. And not that I haven't fallen into, you know, comparing myself even to myself in other fields that I'm in, but I'm not the perfectionist in my family. When it comes to certain things, I'm very much a perfectionist. Like I happened to record some music at a studio end of last year, and it didn't turn out quite the way I wanted sound wise, you know, like the microphones that were used. So I'm going to record it all again. But that's just because it wasn't what I wanted it to sound like. And so I'm going to record it all again. You know, I'm going to scrap it and start over. And so when it comes to certain things, I'm sort of a perfectionist on it because I do know what I want. But even that is very just instinctual for me. I try to trust my instincts. And so many times over the years, I have not trusted my instincts. And then, you know, I've like, okay, well, this person's been in the industry longer. They know what they're doing. And, you know, I always try and just be open to everything that people tell me and listen to what they say and, you know, try and weigh out the good and the bad and, you know, make up my mind based on that. Because I understand that there are people that have been in this industry longer who have a lot more knowledge than I do. But at the end of the day, nobody knows what I'm trying to do better than myself. And so over the years of, again, you know, no offense to anybody that told me anything, it was coming from a place of them trying to help me, but I should have trusted my own instincts foremost, and I didn't, and it didn't turn out quite the way I wanted. And so I've just sort of learned to go with the flow. And, you know, when it comes to me trying to learn audio engineering specifically, I would just sit there for hours messing with things and hearing what different things sounded like and learning, okay, this is what this does, this is what that does. Because to me, being able to hear it is the best teacher for audio engineering, at least for me. You know, that's what I found. Because, you know, being able to say, okay, well, this is what this does to the frequency. Okay, but what does it sound like in the finished product? Because that's what really matters. And so me just sitting there, I sat there for hours and hours. And, you know, nobody taught me how to go through and, you know, level out a track to make sure, you know, that it's sort of balanced. And I had my mastering engineer tell me that he has junior engineers who don't even know how to do that. And I'm like, nobody told me how to do that. It was just common sense to me that, oh, if that place is peaking, I need to bring that down, you know, kind of capture that and bring it down so that it is kind of level with the whole thing. You know, that was just my instinct. So I just try and trust it. And I found that doing that, I'm a lot less likely to start being like, oh, you know, well, this should be better than that. And this should be better than that. Actually, when I start out, I don't do it as much as I do when I get later, because then within that thing, I start comparing. It's like, well, why did that turn out so good? I'm overthinking this now, you know, I'm just, you know, and I tend to do that when I start getting into something, I overthink it. So it's actually later into it that I have to really be like, okay, just take a step back, you know, don't think about this so much. Just listen to what it sounds like and do what comes naturally. So it's definitely a process, and it's a lot of give and take. It's a lot of push and pull within myself, you know, mentally, but I that's just the life of a creative. I think it's always kind of going to be that way.
Definitely. I love your, you have a good self-awareness of just your own process and how you go about things. And like you talk about instincts, you're very much reliant on your instincts for a lot of this. So I appreciate that. I like how we're kind of getting into the creative process. So let's go a little bit further into it. You mentioned for you, it's a lot of experimentation. There's no real shortcuts for this sort of thing. You just have to immerse yourself in something new to learn something. Like you say, okay, I'm going to, you know, fiddle around with this to see how it sounds, but then by itself, it might sound different than in the finished product. So you're doing a lot of experimentation. There's no real shortcut for that. You just have to put the time in, right? So, yeah. And then you had mentioned as far as, you know, even when you get into a project, you know, being self-aware enough to kind of, you know, start where it starts, and then you get a little more kind of into that perfectionist mode, like later on. What are the kind of, I guess, not quirks, but stories can you tell about your creative process as far as like what inspires you? When you are to write a song, like, do you go out, you know, out to a cabin, you know, some people do the Ernest Hemingway, sit by themselves at the bar. Like, is there anything like that that you have that's like a sort of a ritual as far as, you know, tapping into the creativity? Or is it always something that you're sort of working on every day? Like, do you feel inspired and you have a journal? What can you talk about that as far as like capturing the inspiration as far as your creative process goes?
Oh, well, it really varies depending on what I'm doing. When I was writing songs, I haven't written a song since last year. You know, that's when I wrote Maybe. And I very much wanted to write a song. And so I was constantly sort of not thinking about it, but I had my mind open to that. And I haven't had the time nor really the desire to write anything because I know I have so many other projects I'm working on. So it's not a road that I've gone down. I haven't sort of allowed my mind to go to that place write a song lately. And that's something that I know I can do. And I know sort of when to, I've learned when to be open to writing, you know, being inspired to write a song. And when I'm like, okay, just don't worry about it right now. Don't think about it. You've got other things that you've got to do. Because you know, that it takes a lot of mental ability. I suppose that's not quite the right word, but it takes a lot out of my mind. You know, I have so many different projects I'm working on. And like we were talking about, I do so many different things, even within a project, that my mind is always split in so many directions. And songwriting is something that really takes a lot of my mental capability and, you know, emotionally, mentally. And I just know when I don't really have the capacity for that at the time. So songwriting specifically, you know, I kind of know that, but inspiration is something that at first I didn't know where it came from. You mentioned a second ago, I am a very introspective person. I am sort of constantly analyzing myself just because I try to be the best person, you know, not even an artist, but the best person that I can be. So I sometimes I overthink it, but I'm just constantly, you know, analyzing myself and trying to be the best person that I can be. And so with things that I do, it's sort of the same way. And when I first started writing music, within a year, I think I wrote 12 songs. Well, I wrote more than that, but 12, like, finished songs that I wrote out the whole arrangement for, you know, the whole orchestration. And I just absolutely fell in love with. And those are songs that I'm going to be recording on my album. But those songs just kind of came. I don't necessarily know where. There's a couple songs that I know had a specific inspiration. You know, one song I wrote for a friend of mine, another song, I just happened to be scrolling through Facebook and I saw a picture of a clock and I wrote a song called Caught in Time. And so, you know, it's sort of just being open. But at that time, that was very much where my mind was at. It was very open to, you know, especially because it was new, you know, I was writing all these songs. And so it was just constantly on my mind. And oh yeah, I was writing all the time, but it was something that just sort of came very naturally to me. And I didn't think about too much at the time. And so afterwards, when I got busy with other things and I sort of stopped writing, I looked back and was like, okay, you know, how did that happen? And I just recognized that I had put myself in a space and a mindset that allowed me to be inspired by really anything and everything. And, you know, I've sometimes heard artists and creative people, you know, who struggle with finding inspiration. And I know I've been there, and it's honestly most of the time because I'm trying to do it. I'm, you know, trying too hard, and I just have to sort of not go looking for it. I have to be open to it and open to seeing the inspiration in anything and everything, but in a way allowing it to come to me. And I know with maybe specifically, I find a lot of my inspiration actually when I'm outside, not necessarily from things that are outside, but being out in nature, I feel a little more open and a little more connected to my creativity. And so when I go outside, you know, I have a little dog. And so anytime I take her outside, I just sort of stand there and I, you know, my mind just automatically goes to this place of sort of thinking about that. And I like to sing when I'm outside. Nice. And I just started singing the chorus of Maybe, and it just kind of came from nowhere. And I, you know, I was singing it, and a couple of days later it was stuck in my head. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good. And I'm like, well, maybe I should sort of expound on that, you know, make it into a whole song. Yeah. And so I did. I just sort of one day it was like, oh, there's the song. And I had the whole song sort of play out in my mind, and I sang through it and I wrote it down. And, you know, that was just kind of it. So it's a process that is really not a process. It's just more so understanding myself and kind of how I work, and but not being afraid to sort of just go with the flow.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But again, the self-awareness comes in because you almost like you allow yourself, you give yourself pockets of time to let that manifest into these songs. And then other than that, it's almost like a tap you turn on and off. It's like, okay, songwriting time, you could turn it on. You have this like creative outburst.
I've definitely kind of learned how to do that now. I remember at first though, I was so exhausted for like a year of that I was songwriting, because it was constantly something that was on my mind. Like I said, it's very sort of mentally and physically, emotionally, let me say that again, mentally and emotionally draining on me, because I would be up like all night writing. I could not turn off my mind from that. And I would be laying in bed and I would get the lyrics in my head and have to get up and I'd write it down, or I'd get the song and I'd have to make a voice memo on my phone to record the melody or something. And so it was just something that, and I enjoyed the process a lot, but it was very draining. And so I definitely did, after that first year, I sort of learned how to turn it on and off, like you said.
Smart. No, that's great. Let's get into the single a little bit. So yeah, I like the origins here. You're outside with your dog. I'm picturing it. You're out in nature. You're humming this to yourself. It's almost like a litmus test. Like if it comes back to you and you're like, wait, there is something there, and then you act on it basically. So yeah, the actual single itself. So Maybe, as we mentioned, comes out March 4th. Let's get into it a little bit. I definitely heard the classical training as far as like your presentation with your singing. Actually, right before, just a quick one other segue. What is it about opera that just draws you into it? What resonates with you about opera and like this old timey kind of the early pop music? What is it about that just really connects with you?
I honestly don't know. You know, it's partially, I think, something that I'm very just familiar with, because that's kind of how I grew up. You know, I started playing violin when I was 8, and I was classically trained on violin and piano. I was always a classical musician growing up. My family, we're from Florida in kind of the country. My family's always been kind of country. You know, I grew up listening to Johnny Cash and Hank Williams and people like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a kid, we also listened to classical music because that's what we were playing a lot. And so I definitely developed an appreciation for classical music. And I think that's sort of what, when I was like 15, I got into the vintage pop music a little bit more. When I was young though, we watched just all the old movies and I fell in love with them. And it, in my own opinion, I like them a lot better than a lot of the movies that come out now.
Sure.
But that's just because, you know, maybe it's because of the classic themes or the acting, but I don't know. There's just something about them that is just very dear to me.
Yeah.
And I love them. And so, you know, watching the movies, the music sort of followed when I got older, and when streaming platform sort of came about when I was a little older, and it was like, oh wow, you know, I can find all this old music on here. And so I was able to listen to it, and that's sort of all I listen to now. You know, I listen to a little bit of classical music, but so I think just appreciating those old things when I started singing, and I liked classical music because I was being trained, you know, classically, because that's, again, we're kind of back to allowing the body, you know, to do what happens naturally. Right. That was the approach that my vocal coach took. And the classical way of singing, what people associate as the classical sound, is actually what the voice wants to sound like naturally. You know, there's definitely quite a bit of study and practice that has to get a lot of training that goes into it to get to a certain level of doing something like opera. But the natural, the classical sound is very much just sort of the natural voice. And so I was being trained that way to be able to do that. But my love was actually musical theater. And I still, I have such a passion for live theater. And, but musical theater was what I wanted to go into. And believe it or not, I had the thought of maybe pursuing opera, but I didn't really take it seriously. And because I just thought, no, musical theater is what I love. That's what I'm going to do. And my vocal coach one day mentioned something to me about having the voice for opera. And I was like, oh, is that a thing? You know, can you like have a voice that is more suited towards opera? And so I really had to think about that. And the more I got into it and the more I learned, the more I just fell in love with sort of the, I can't think of the word I'm wanting to use. I almost had it. But, you know, like the study of it, you know, all the work that goes into it,
sure,
to be able to do that. And I just found a really great appreciation and admiration for the opera singers who put all the time into it to create such a beautiful art. And that's the way I started to see it. You know, it kind of transformed from being just music to being an art form. And it was sort of a higher level of art form than, say, just theater. And because you're telling the story through the music, and music has always been my passion. You know, even sometimes when I tried to deny it, music was always there. And just, you know, even if it was kind of laying low and I was trying to do other things, I always came back to music. And so being able to really express a story solely through music and solely through singing, which is, you know, what I ended up pursuing, I fell in love with. I just thought it was amazing. And so it's partially just sort of finding where I fit in. And that was what my voice lent itself to. And it was also, you know, partially learning about it and going, wow, you know, this is a very, sometimes very intense, but a very rewarding art form. And I just loved the classical feel of it. And as I got into it a little more, you know, especially after my voice change, my voice started leaning even a little bit more towards Baroque music specifically. So we're talking about the very old classical music, some of the original classical music. And I would be extremely happy to just spend the rest of my life being a Baroque recitalist. I adore singing Baroque music. And I've been developing my coloratura. I'm now a coloratura mezzo-soprano, and I absolutely love I cannot think of the word that I'm trying to say.
As soon as
we're
done, you're going to be like, oh, that's the word.
Yes. Yeah. I do that all the time.
Yeah. No, that's all good.
But yeah.
That happens often. No, that paints the picture for sure. I could see it's sort of like a nostalgic thing for you, a personal taste. Mm-hmm. Also, it happens to just suit your musical style as well. So
yeah, it's definitely a lot of things.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Which is great. You kind of touched on it there. I'm just curious from an outsider. I have a very much appreciation for opera, obviously not at the same level that you do. But when I think of opera, I mean, you're saying it's a natural style of singing. Like, I'm picturing it because it's like, it's very like, you know, the low larynx, it's very projection heavy. It's like, there's no necessarily microphone in front of you. So you really got to like belt it out there. And there's this like degree of projection that's different than, you know, the pop or rock singing where you have like the nuances of like getting close to the mic and all that. How does that transfer as far as when you're actually recording yourself? Like, do you have to be back from the mic? Because I always viewed opera as this very almost percussive and like very dynamic as far as like, you know, loud and projecting. Is that sort of true? Like, or can you kind of get into like the nuances of the microphone with that style as well?
Oh, definitely. I can style my voice in different ways. And what you hear like on Maybe, because Maybe is actually released as a pop song. It's I'm not singing it like I would if I was singing opera.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people, I think, hear it that way just because it is sort of subtle to a lot of people, you know, who aren't necessarily into opera. But if you ask anybody in the opera world, it is not an opera song. If you ask anybody in the pop world, it's an opera song. It just kind of depends on what you're used to, but definitely. And that's something that I still am sort of learning to do is self-mixing with the microphone, you know, being, you know, backing up on loud notes and stuff, but I definitely do have to do that. But I'm working on an easy listening album right now with some of the old, you know, jazz standards and stuff from the like 30s and 40s. And that is definitely something that's a little more, you know, close to the mic, but it's just about styling the voice. I still sing, it's because it's the way of singing, you know, the science behind, you know, how the voice works, that I'm technically singing it classically because I don't, you know, push my chest voice up into my head or anything like that. My voice is very balanced. What I think a lot of people would call one voice, you know, with that classical sound, if anybody knows, you know, singing, it flips into your head voice. And so it still does that, but I know how to style it so that it doesn't sound like I'm singing opera, because trust me, it does sound different when I'm singing opera. Thankfully though, having to do with loudness, it's something that I am a little more, it's a little easier for me to do right now because I am only 22. My voice isn't fully matured. My voice isn't as loud as it will be when I'm in my late 20s and my voice is fully matured. So I do have that benefit of, you know, it is loud. People hear me sing all the time and they're always shocked at how loud my voice is. And I'm like,
just you wait. Yeah.
Just you wait. You know, I keep being told that, you know, my voice is very quiet for an opera singer, obviously, because I'm only 22. Yeah. So it still has a long way to go in that space. But yeah, for a pop singer, it's pretty loud. So I definitely do have to sort of, you know, control that stylistically and also, you know, self-mixing myself the microphone in the recording studio.
Right. Which is, in a sense, it's a good thing that you are producing yourself, because you can take all the time to practice that. Yeah. Whereas if you had to do it in these little bursts of time, it would take you a lot more of a learning curve to kind of get to the stage that you could do that, I would imagine, eh?
Yeah. Well, sort of. You know, I did record the song in a recording studio, so time is still money.
Fair enough.
So, you know, we still want to try and keep it down to as few takes as possible.
Of course.
Not only because it's a wear on the voice, but also because, you know, you're paying for a studio, for studio time and an engineer, and you know, you want to try and get it done. But it's definitely something that if it wasn't right, I would do it again, just because, you know, that's, I want what I put out there to be the best version of it that it can be for the song itself. You know, I've sort of always viewed my songs, my projects, as entities. And you know, when I write music, people are always asking me, you know, oh well, you know, why does your music sound like that? What is it that influences you to sound like that? And I'm like, I write every single arrangement that I've written, I think, has been for a different orchestration, a different arrangement of instruments, sort of all within strings and piano and woodwinds, because I like that sound, but different combinations of all of them and different, you know, stylistic notes in there. But I say, because that's what the song wants, you know. This is, it takes me a lot of time when I'm writing a song to sort of sit down and figure out what instruments I'm going to use and what sort of the theme of the harmonies are going to be. And, you know, the chord reharmonization is going to be, and sort of to figure that out. And because I want it to be what that song wants to sound like. And so even, you know, when it comes to the recording process, you know, I want it to be the best so that when somebody hears it, they're hearing a complete finished product of that song. And it really does influence sort of the story that it tells, but even the listener's experience, you know, any little thing in it. So, you know, trying to make sure that it's perfect, as perfect can be in the art world, you know. As an artist, no art is really ever finished. I like what somebody said one time, art is never finished, it's only abandoned. Like, that is very true, you know. I have to set deadlines for myself sometimes so that I don't just, you know, keep working on things and sort of beat it to death. But yeah,
that's always a tricky part, right? When is it finished? And I mean, that's a great question. Like, so when do you know? I've heard some great things, like when one of the quotes that I really liked when I was talking to an artist says, I find that it's finished when I start only moving sideways. It's not moving it better. It's not moving it ahead necessarily. All I'm doing is going sideways or even backwards at times. I'm like, okay, well, that's a good analogy of it. You've mentioned how instinctual you are with it. Is it, I guess, yeah, the question would be, is it solely on your instincts, or do you set a deadline and because you know yourself well enough that you're going to keep tinkering with it and you're like, no, I committed to this date, so it is done. Like, what does that look like for you to go, nope, this song, this album, this whatever it may be is complete?
It depends. When I'm starting a project, I never set a deadline. I probably never set a deadline until I send the song off to be mastered. Because then it's kind of out of my hands after it's mastered. There's really nothing I can do with it anymore.
Right.
So I really never set a deadline like for a release, and then everything that happens in there. So like the music video, that has a deadline, you know, I had to film it in this time and I have to edit it in this time so that I can get it up by this date because the release has already been set.
Right.
But when it comes to the songs itself, I hardly ever set a date on that for at the beginning because I don't want to rush myself or scare myself into, you know, not doing the best job that I can on it. But it's definitely tricky to try and balance when something is finished. And this is something that I don't necessarily recommend, and it's going to sound kind of funny because, you know, creative people already sort of have this stigma of, about being very emotional people, very sensitive people. But I can pretty much tell when a project is done when it moves me emotionally. You know, that is not always the best thing. I would never really recommend that to somebody just because, you know, how do you as the artist sort of take a step back and look at it objectively, right, and, you know, say that it's done? But it's more so, I think when it moves me is because it's a realization of what I've had in my mind all along. Nice. And I, so it's like, I can see the two coming together and they're exactly the same. And that doesn't always happen. You know, there's definitely projects that I've had. I had a very specific idea when I started out, and the end project is very different than what I wanted. Either that's because I was unsure about how to get there. Like in my trying to get to that end project that I product that I wanted, I wasn't able to. And, but you know, it's still, like I said, I've never released anything if I don't think it's good. So it's still good, but was it what I had originally? Maybe not, you know, maybe I still need to learn a little bit more about a certain thing to be able to achieve that, but it's still good. But sometimes in going through the process of creating something, I find something better than I had even imagined.
Yeah.
And honestly, that is one of the most tricky things about me, you know, the work that I do specifically, but I think just being a creative is being set so that you can be organized. You know, like when I go film a music video, I need to have an idea of what I'm wearing, where the shots are going to be taken, what shots are going to be taken so that I can achieve the finished video that I want. But at the same time, if something strikes me in the moment and I'm like, hey, I want a shot over here, me doing this, then I need to be able to have the flexibility to do that. And sometimes, you know, that happens all the time. And sometimes I don't have a very solid idea of what something's going to look like at the very end. And I just sort of play with it. And at the end, you know, when I, like I said, when it sort of moves me and I go, wow, I really like that, you know, then I go, okay, you know, maybe it's done. And, but I always show things to different people too. You know, I have people that are very close to that I trust implicitly with my projects, you know, in very early stages that I can trust their honest feedback and critiques of to say, what do you think of this? And they will be completely honest with me if they think something needs to be changed. And even if I think something is pretty much finished and they see something that I don't, you know, that's why it's always good to have another pair of eyes or another pair of ears to see and hear things that you didn't catch when you watched it or listened to it or whatever it is. And so definitely sort of having them there to edit or to sort of be your catch-all, you know. For me, that's my family and a few people outside of my family, but mostly just my family, because I know that no matter what, they are going to support me. And even if they're like, hey, maybe if you do that, or this doesn't sound right, or that doesn't look right, it gives me sort of a jumping off point to go look at it a little bit more objectively. Cause like I said, artists sort of have this stigma of not being able to look at their own work very objectively. to be able to do that and say, okay, you're right. You know, this needs to be changed. Let me figure out, you know, how to change this. And 9 times out of 10, 9.5 times out of 10, they're right. And it does make it even better. So, you know, definitely having a support group around to kind of be a voice for you, even, you know, when you don't really want to hear the honest truth. You're like, isn't this great? And you just kind of want somebody to go, yeah, that's really great. But, you know, for something that, you know, I look at as art and that I'm releasing out into the world for the public, I don't want it to just be good enough, like I said, because it's not just for, you know, my namesake, but for the project itself, for somebody to be moved by the story that it tells and the experience that they have when consuming the art is very important to me. So, you know, having people there to help me along the way is very important.
It sounds like, you have a great duality of there's on one hand, you know, inside how you want it to sound like, but you're still very open and it's a very important part of your process to have that supportive. It sounds like your family more than anything, that supportive, they've seen you grow right from day one to what you are, you know, what you're becoming now, and have a vision for what you are going to be able to become. So that's, it's very crucial. So it's almost like those two, you have your own bubble, but then you all can also have your support group. So very important. That's beautiful. You know what? So what is the theme of maybe? I got a lot of imagery. It's like dreams. I might be paraphrasing, but dreams aren't always what they seem. Things of that nature. What is the story behind the single?
Well, it's been a lot of what we've been talking about, actually. I think I mentioned that I had a voice change when I was 20, and it sort of threw me for a loop. And I had a lot of people concerned that I was going to kind of hold on to that because I'd been a soprano for the last like 5 years, or, you know, really all my life. But when I started taking voice lessons and my voice was a soprano. And so it sort of, I think the whole idea of maybe stemmed from that experience, but it wasn't terribly specific. You know, it's, my mind is always working. It's always thinking. And so I have these culminations of ideas all the time. And I honestly think that's what maybe is. It's just sort of a culmination of a lot of different ideas that maybe stemmed from different things in my life. One of them being that I literally had to find another song to sing, you know, as the, maybe one of the lyrics maybe says, maybe there's a life for me to lead. Maybe I can find another song to sing. And I pretty much literally had to do that when my voice changed. And I didn't really go through, you know, any type of grief when my voice changed from mezzo soprano. It was definitely a big change that I had to get used to, but I was perfectly fine with it. I actually embraced it quite a bit more than I think a lot of people thought I would. I love being a mezzo soprano. It definitely feels more natural to me than being a soprano. I love what my voice can do now. Obviously it couldn't really do that for the first like year and a half, cause it was still sort of balancing out, and you know, my vocal cords were still getting kind of settled into being this, but all the dreams that I had when I was a soprano of roles that I would be able to play, repertoire that I would be able to sing, just sort of vanished overnight because my voice literally dropped 3 half steps overnight. And I went, wow, okay. You know, I don't know much about mezzo sopranos. So what do they sing? What roles do they play? And I had to relearn all of that. And it wasn't a bad thing. I absolutely loved it, you know, but it was something that I had to learn. And so I think maybe really sort of stems from the journey that I've been on, you know, also with my music. You know, when I was 17 and graduating high school, I had a very definite idea of what my career was going to look like over the next few years. And that didn't happen. It's been almost 5 years now since I graduated, and I am going down a completely different road. Do I believe that it's sort of leading to the same end destination? I honestly think it is, but it's go at getting there in a completely different way than I ever imagined that it would be. And so maybe is just sort of the encouragement for anybody who's ever been through something similar to that. Because, you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have specifically gone through, you know, a voice change or, sure. you know, you have these profound dreams of, you know, a career that you want to have, you know, even if you aren't really a dreamer. I think the point of the song will really resonate with you because it's just about finding a perspective in life that allows us to kind of go with the flow yeah. and say, you know what? Maybe I had this dream about the way my life would go. And I thought that this would be the best thing. And all these other things were second best. And come to find out what was you thought was second best was really first best all along. Mm. And that's sort of a paraphrase. This is someplace else that I think some of the inspiration came from for maybe when a movie that I love was made sometime between like 1943 and 1945 called I'll Be Seeing You with Ginger Rogers, Joseph Cotton and Shirley Temple. And it's a beautiful movie, but a woman in the movie is telling Ginger Rogers this about, you know, we have these dreams and we have these castles in the air and, you know, we think we're going to be disappointed when it doesn't come true. Come to find out when life plays out and we're, you know, in a place where we're very happy and looking back, it's like, oh, wow, you know, that didn't play out the way I thought it would, but yet you don't miss it. Mm. You don't really even wish for it because you're very content in where you are, even if that's what you thought was second best a long time ago and you didn't want to settle for it. You find out you're not really settling.
Beautiful. I love it. That's not, yeah, let's leave it like that. So maybe comes out and that comes out. It definitely, maybe definitely comes out March 4th, the videos yes. to follow March 5th. And so Emily E. Fink, where can we find you online? And congrats again on, and thank you so much for coming on the show and congrats on this wonderful single. Thank We're going to spin it right at the thank end you. Of the podcast here. But before we do, where can we find you online?
Pretty much anywhere. I have a website. It's Emily E. Fink. And then I'm on social media, you know, Facebook and Instagram, YouTube, all the streaming platforms. If you just search Emily E. Fink, my music should come up. And otherwise, just go to my website. It's emilyefink.com. And you can link to, you know, pretty much anywhere from there.
Beautiful. And I guess I'm assuming the music video will be on your YouTube channel, or was that available off yes. of all your platforms as well?
It will be on my YouTube channel.
Premiered on your yep. YouTube channel. Okay, awesome. I'll yep. make sure to link that in the notes as well. Thank you so much yeah. for coming on the show today. Great conversation. There's a lot more that yeah. we could you know, unpack. I love picking your brain about just creativity in general. I love mm-hmm. nerding out on that stuff. So yeah. let's do another show sometime down the road. I'll let you get some promotion yeah. behind all this. And you know what? If you get to the point where you're looking at putting out this full album and it's all recorded, please by all means reach out to me again. I'd love to have you back on the program and we thank can do a little follow up there. So all the best thank to you, and thank you so much again for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you. If I just believe I can get that far, I'll never look behind me. I'm letting go of the past. Maybe somewhere there's a life for me to live.
sun. When we look at our dreams, what do we see? Our dreams, only dreams. Are they real or make-believe? Our dreams, only real in our dreams. Maybe somewhere there's a life for me to leave. Maybe I can find another song to sing. Maybe dreams don't come true. Sometimes they do, just not.